This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Backpacking Podcast, brought to you by Outdoor Vitals. As always, myself, John Kelly, I'm here with Jeremiah Stringer, and we want to say a big thank you to our title sponsor, Outdoor Vitals, makers of the Ventus hoodie, which, Jeremiah, I believe you are a personal big fan of yourself.
Actually, I do own the Ventus hoodie. I love it. Y'all should definitely check it out. It comes from the Latin word for wind, and I think that's a pretty accurate description because it has vents all down the side, so you'll stay nice and breezy. You're not going to sweat. You can move in it, and it's a good breathable piece, but it'll keep you warm because it's an insulated hoodie.
That's right, and if you guys use the web address outdoorvitals.com/BP hoodie, you can get that for $30 off, including a free 2.5-ounce pillow. And given who we're having on here today, having ultralight gear is very important. So big thank you to Outdoor Vitals for that. And Jeremiah, today we kind of have ultralight royalty on here today.
I know, man. This guy, the accolades are endless. One being an author, which I have his book here.
I do.
Called
as well.
Take Less, Do More, Surprising Life Lessons.
That's releasing this week, I believe, right?
Yes, and we'll talk more about it here in just a minute, I'm sure. An adventurer, a backpacker, a gear creator, an ultralighter at heart.
Yeah, and a guy who was thinking about this stuff when nobody else was.
So, yeah, Yeah, this rolls way back.
This is going to be good stuff, and he's probably going to make us look silly because he probably has forgotten more about backpacking than we know.
Well, dude, I like hanging out with people that make me better.
I'm right there with you, man. So we ready to bring this guy on?
Absolutely.
Folks, welcome to the show. Founder of Gossamer Gear, ultralight backpacker and author, Mr. Glenn Van Pesky. How's it going, man?
Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're really glad to have you on here. This is just an honor to have you here. Real quick, I got to know, what was it like? I read your part of your book where you talked about being the Boy Scouts with your son, but what was it like being able to learn kind of the backpacking ropes alongside of your son?
That was a lot of fun. It was important to me to do that. And really, someone asked me, because I started kind of my first big adventure was 1976, rode my bicycle cross country, and then I stayed on the West Coast. And so this guy's asking, well, so, you know, you were in the mountains and doing caving and river and ocean, and all that kind of stuff. It's like, well, not really. No, I was, you know, going to school, building a career and starting a family. And so it was really when our son Brian joined Boy Scouts that I got back into outdoor gear and outdoor adventures.
Yeah, I loved reading about you going into an REI and looking at all this gear, getting it all home, putting it all together. And then you're like, hey, let's weigh it and see what we got. And it was 70 plus pounds of gear on your back.
Yeah. Yeah. When we left for that week in the Sierra with food and water, it was 70 pounds.
I got to tell you, I had a similar experience on my first trek. It is amazing, by the way, just how many people, they really get deep into backpacking through the Boy Scouts. It's amazing. Like how many dads get like drug into the mud through it. And I think that kind of happened with me and my father-in-law. He invited me on my first trip, and I remember borrowing all this gear. I was in the best shape of my life, you know, 22, 23 years old, just waiting to go. And I remember going out there, and my backpack was like 55 pounds, and I'd done, 40 or 50 miles through the Smoky Mountains. And I remember the first day, well, we got there at like 11 o'clock, and I just walked uphill straight for 10 miles. And didn't get to that shelter until nighttime. At the end of the trip, I think I brought home probably like 6 pounds of food. I had a full jar of peanut butter still with me. it's miserable. So at what point did you decide, okay, this is heavy, there has to be a better way to do it?
Well, the genesis of that was really Ray Jardine's original book, The Pacific Crest Trail Hiker's Handbook, and my buddy Reed Miller, who was the scoutmaster of our local troop, he read it, and he says, oh, Glenn, you got to read this thing. It's mind-blowing. And so we started, started working on lightning packs, and it was important because a lot of the Boy Scouts, when they first cross over, they're young, and some of them were small. And so we'd go through their gear. And I remember one shakedown trip we're doing on the Pacific Crest Trail. It was just like an overnight. And so we were standing around a picnic table, kind of all the adult leaders trying to go through these guys' gear. And so we went through this one kid's pack, little guy, and we took all this stuff out, and finally let's ready to go. And I noticed this one kid carrying a trash bag full of stuff. Plus he's got his backpack on. And I said, what's in the bag? He said, well, that's all the stuff that didn't fit in my pack. It's like, no. hang on. We're starting over here. Yeah. So it was a process. Definitely.
Yeah. I actually helped a Boy Scout a couple of years ago. He was getting ready to go out to Philmont, which actually there's a question that was asked by Riff Outdoors. Did you ever make it out to Philmont?
No, my son Brian did though.
Yeah, they say that's a pretty fun hike. They say that's a really great trip. But I was helping one of these students out. You're going to love this. And he comes up and he shows me his pack. And he said, yeah, it was my dad's pack. And I was like, oh, really? He goes, yeah. He hands it to me. And it's an old Kelty external frame backpack.
Nice.
With the big metal frame on it. And I mean, I just looked at him. I said, wow, man, that's... Are you excited about using it? He goes, no. So I've got a bunch of extra gear, and I'll let people borrow my stuff. So he ended up actually taking my pack, and these stories that you tell stories in this book, and I don't want to give too much away because I want people to be able to read this for themselves. But the stories of people coming out on their early backpacking trips and the stuff they're bringing, and it's amazing. Just the evolution for all of us, because I think every one of us starts off with a 50 to 70 pound backpack when we get started, and then after a few years of dialing things in, we kind of figure it out. What I want to know, what got you to make your own like gear? Like, what got you actually thinking about that? What was the inspiration behind starting that? Because we all know you were the founder of Gossamer Gear, which makes incredible gear. Actually, makes one of my favorite things in the world, their umbrella. Like, of all things, I love the umbrella from Gossamer Gear. But what got you started making gear?
Well, my mom thought every kid should leave home knowing how to do three things. How to cook, how to bake, and how to sew.
Huh.
And didn't matter whether you were a boy or a girl. She just considered those basic life skills. And so I knew how to sew. In fact, in 1976, when I graduated high school and rode my bicycle across the country, I sewed myself a tarp. So I was already kind of making my own gear. And then it seemed natural 30, 40 years later when my son was in Boy Scouts and my buddy read Ray Jardine's book. It's like, well, I can make a pack. I actually had one of those when I was in Boy Scouts, had one of those Kelty external frame packs.
Nice.
And I swear it was lighter than what they sold me back for the Sierra Trek when I went in, because it was the new thing was the internal frames. And I don't know how it would move with your body or yada, yada, yada. And that thing weighed 7.5 pounds empty. And I wish I'd still had my old Kelty. I would have taken that. But so I started sewing packs. I figured, I looked at that 7.5 pound pack and said, well, that's a good place to start.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you went through tons of generations of it before you finally settled on the G4. Is that right?
Well, that was pack number four. That's why it's called the G4. That was the fourth one I made. You know, if you're an engineer, and it doesn't have to be in your job title, I can tell by looking at people, it's like, yeah, I see you. you're an engineer. I don't care what's on your business card. Like, I know how you are. You know, when you have something, it's like you keep thinking about how to make it better. And so I was always, I made my first pack and thing was huge. It was light, but it was huge. And so I'd hike along thinking about like, I bet I could make this better. And this would work better if I did it this way. And so I'd make another pack. And today I always tell people, sometimes I'll be speaking and someone will come up and say, oh, I made my own pack. And I said, that's great. Just know it won't be the last one you make.
Hopefully.
I believe it.
You mentioned a couple of times about this bike trip where you and some buddies pretty much biked across the country. And am I right that is kind of the genesis of the big adventures that you took?
Yeah, that was the first one. And, you know, probably my biggest adventure to date, actually. So the book actually comes out tomorrow and we're having a virtual launch party. And one of the guys that signed up is actually one of those guys who in 1976 rode across the country with me, Guy Jalapa. And he wants to do a trip, the 50-year anniversary, called Complete the Loop, and then write a book about that, which I think would be awesome.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Did you already say yes?
Well, you know, you guys married?
I'm married.
I've been married almost 42 years. So sometimes you have to kind of release information like a bit at a time.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you don't get the straight no. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to let it leak through.
We're in discussions.
That's awesome. This book will only hold so much, right? It's a snapshot. It's got a lot of great life lessons. I'm curious about on this bike trip that you took. You said it was what year?
1976.
Okay. So we live in a totally different time now with like GPS and, you know, if you need anything or anything goes wrong, you can typically just call or text somebody or find a way. The world is so small. I'm curious, other than the things that you put in the book, is there anything from that trip that comes to mind that you wish you could add in the book, or that, you know, would be something that you learned or a difficulty that you went through that you just didn't have quite the room to fit in the book?
You know, I didn't take any notes from that summer, which I don't know why. Sometimes you can go too light. Yeah, probably would have been nice to have some notes. Luckily, Guy took some notes, so he has a journal from that summer. And it boggles my mind now to think back, like at 17, I thought it would be a good idea to get on a bicycle with no helmet, 10 speeds, no cell phone, no GPS, no nothing, and ride across the country. And I was going to do it by myself, and then you know, three buddies said, well, that sounds like a great idea. Can we come? So sure. But yeah, we took a big map of the United States, like a car map with the major highways, took a highlighter from one end to the other and drew a blue line. And then when we got to each state, this was still when they gave out paper maps at gas stations for free, which I know is just crazy talk. And then we'd get into that state and kind of look at our overall map and look at the state map and kind of figure out where we were going. In terms of stories that didn't make it, I don't know. I got most of the high points. There was, I think all the, probably everything I remember is in the book, because there wasn't, you know, I didn't have any notes.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you went from would you consider it bike packing?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we didn't stay in hotels. I think maybe once or twice. I don't remember that, but it's in the notes. And we would buy, you know, Burger King for lunch we weren't doing a lot of cooking that I remember. Sometimes oatmeal in the morning, I think. But we were camping out. I mean, so, it wasn't in the woods. We were on old state highways and stuff like that.
So just out of curiosity, you're 17 years old. You're still high school kids. What were your parents thinking about you guys just riding across the country? I'm a parent, and I'm sitting here thinking, am I going to let my 17-year-old kid just get with some buddies and go ride across the country on a bike? You know, so what was, I mean, how did you guys convince your parents to let you go do that ride?
Well, my parents were divorced, so I was with my mom on the East Coast, Western Massachusetts, and she figures, I've talked to my brother and sister, and we all felt this. She swears she never said it, but somehow we all got the message that when you're 18, when you graduate high school, you're gone. Like, she has given you all the skills you need, and it's time to go make your way. And so we called her twice in the 6 weeks, or I called her twice in the 6 weeks that it took to go across, and she was unperturbed each time. I mean, she figured she'd given me all the skills I needed to make my way, and I would figure it out.
And has your sons asked if they can do anything wild like this in their adolescence?
No. I mean, you know, Brian's a pretty big adventurer. He'll say, yeah, I'm, you know, going to New Zealand and renting a van and traveling around doing some hiking for a while. It's like, that's great. You know, send pictures. Yeah.
Well, how did it go from you took this massive trip to one day you're turning into somebody that's making their own backpacking gear, you know, your own backpack, so totally different than the other stuff out there. And of course you talk a lot about it in the book, especially about your gear and stuff. So how did it morph into on foot instead of on the bike?
You know, I think it was because of Boy Scouts. I mean, I kind of hung up the bike when I got to the West Coast. I drove down the coast, was staying at my dad's house, and had vague kind of plans of going back and being an interpreter. I liked languages, and you know, this was pre-internet, so you couldn't really research anything. You just had these dumb ideas and no one to tell you they were dumb. But a buddy of my dad's had a small civil engineering land development business, and they needed someone to draft. And so they knew my dad was really smart, and they figured, well, I couldn't be too dumb. So they hired me to draft. And so with that, they offered me $3.50 an hour, and that was like more money than I had ever thought about in my life.
What year was this?
This was 1976.
Okay, yeah.
That was definitely over the minimum wage.
Yeah, that was like big money. So I, you know, chucked my dreams of becoming an interpreter and said, yeah, I'll draft. And, you know, that I ended up becoming a civil engineer just from that fluke encounter.
Wow.
I do want to hear more about the morphing into backpacking, but you did bring up languages just there. And I know your love for Japanese. I'm just curious, are you fluent in multiple languages, or do you learn kind of like the travel lingo and you can get around in a lot of different countries? How's that work?
You know, I don't know if you found this, just because you like something doesn't mean you're any good at it.
I've been there.
That's fair.
I had a roommate once who, actually, our oldest son Brian is named after him. Had a roommate called Brian, and he loved to sing. But he came home, like, I remember, like, perplexed one day because they asked him not to come to choir anymore. He didn't understand why, you know. So long way of saying is, like, no, I'm not fluent in anything. I took French, Latin, and Greek in high school, and I'm surprised how much French actually kind of stuck. We were in France a few years ago at an Airbnb, and she only knew French, and I was able to kind of, you know, we could figure out what we needed to.
Yeah. It's amazing how little, like, of each other's languages you can know. And through a little bit of charades and a little bit of communication, like my wife and I, we did the Camino de Santiago, which goes across Spain. And we did like the full 1,000K, you know, over the summer. And we are not formally trained in Spanish. I mean,
you're not formally trained in English half the time, man. I love you.
I went to Chick-fil-A. We call it linguistic racism on here.
he calls me a linguistic racist.
Yeah, because my accent, I talk, and sometimes my wife can't understand me, and we're from the same hometown. I don't know what it is. I went to Chick-fil-A on Friday and got us some dinner, and the girl... She said, "What's the name on the order?" I said, "Jeremiah." And I went to pick it up, and I was the only one in line. And the girl at the front, different girl, just kept saying, "Jamail, Jamail." And I was like, "Jamail." And I look around, and I'm the only one there. And I said, "Is it a number one and a number seven?" She's like, "It sure is." I said, "It's Jeremiah." She said, "Not today." She said, "It's Jamail." And handed me the bag.
Glenn, one of our favorite words on this podcast is vestibule.
Yeah, I say vestibule.
He, for the longest time, Jeremiah called it a vegetable. So
they like.
I give him crap all the time, but the truth, he can say vestibule now. So
that's good.
We're proud of him. We're very proud of him.
I'm always looking for ways to improve myself. What were you gonna say, John?
Well, speaking of words, we have a question on here. what was the genesis of the company name Gossamer for Gossamer gear?
Actually, that was my wife, Francie.
Really?
She just informed me, reminded me of that the other day. Yes.
So what was it that brought that on then? Is it just, she just liked the name or?
Well, I was talking about, and I might've been, this was probably had the internet, thank goodness, by then. I was probably looking at words that meant like light and airy and stuff like that. Because the original, you know, originally I was only going to get 25 packs made. And so I just called it GVP gear. My initials is like, you know, when this is going to be a 2-month effort, you don't put too much trouble into picking a name.
Right.
But when it became clear that this was going to be go on for longer than I thought, okay, we really, you know, we need a real name here. So yeah, we're just kicking around words, and it's got the G thing going for it. So I like that. And double G, you know, Gossamer gear. We didn't quite get to garage grown gear, you know, 3 G's. That's kind of the holy grail, but we were close.
Hey, you mentioned in your book about a company like garage grown gear. I don't remember the name of it, but you said that when you first started, they kind of like gave you a platform. Do you remember what it's called?
It was Craig Delger was the guy.
I can't remember what it was called, but basically they did the same thing Gossamer gear is, right?
Well, same thing, garage grown gear, kind of. Yeah. They were kind of, amassing, like they had a platform that they were trying to get other companies to kind of use. Gosh, what was the name of that? Like ProLight gear or something. I forget. That's a good question.
That's pretty cool. And, well, I actually have a question for you about your gear. So we were talking earlier about you had the Gen 1, the G2, the G3, the G4. Well, you're still involved in helping design gear today, right?
I am. If I need something, like I needed a shelter that was bug proof for doing a 900 miles on the Great Divide, you know, real bike packing. And, you know, the one was going to be too heavy and bulky for me. So I said, well, I need a new tent. So I think I made 12 prototypes in Tyvek before I started putting DCF together and finally came up with the Whisper. And I used it on that trip and a couple others. And anytime I come up with a piece of gear, the first question when we get the design group together is, okay, does anyone think there's 5 people in the world besides Glenn that thinks this piece of gear is a good idea?
Well, I've got a question about a specific piece of gear that I was on the Gossamer Gear website, and it's this new PVT system. Are you part of putting that together?
I am not. That's people way smarter than me. And well, a little heavier than me, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to say, I was looking at it, And it looks interesting to me. Just the way it's all set up and just the stability of it. It seems like it now, like you said, it's probably a little heavier than what you would carry, but just from everything I saw, it just seems like it does a great job of transferring weight. It looks like it would make the pack really comfortable. So
it is pretty amazing. We've gotten some great feedback from early users on it. It's real. And one of the amazing things about it is the function, with as light as it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to tell you, speaking of gear, the Gossamer gear, I have probably one likely candidate for my favorite piece of GG gear, and then one that you would never, ever guess in a million years, I don't think.
Crotch pad.
That would be a good one. That would be a good one. I read that, and I said, I don't think that's for me. we were talking to Backcountry Foodie, who she runs like a channel on Instagram and stuff where she does some backpacking nutrition stuff and like ships people food or sets up menus and stuff for them. And she went hard and heavy on the cold soaking. And basically I was informed that I just wasn't doing it right because I was trying to cold soak foods that should be eaten hot whenever I should have been cold soaking foods that are nice cold.
You need the crotch pot, clearly.
you want to tell everybody that's uninformed about this crotch pot invention of yours?
Well, this happened, and Ron Moak will swear it's his invention. Don't believe him. We did for a few years. We did what we kind of jokingly called the brain trust hike, and it was. Whoever could make it, it was kind of the early ultralight gear guys. It was Ron Moak, a Six Moon Designs, myself, Henry Shires, a Tarp Tent, and Brian Frankel of ULA Designs. And so we were doing, I think it was the Tahoe Rim Trail, pretty sure. And Tahoe Rim Trail. And we're engaging in the normal trash talking about weight and what matters and stuff like that. And we start talking about cooking and how heavy that is and how you should just be able to use your body heat. And, you know, what's the hottest part of your body? You know, obviously if you're cold, you know, if your hands are cold, where do you put them in your sleeping bag, you know, in your crotch? So we started kidding around and joking on this. And I thought, well, no time like the present to test this out. So I took my dinner, put it in a Ziploc bag and slipped it into my pants. And then, you know, just kind of, flipped the top of the bag over so it didn't like fall out one of my legs. And I'm hiking along and I thought, well, I should like check on it here. And so when I pulled it out, the top ripped off and I almost ended up wearing my dinner, but was able to extricate it before it completely ripped off. And so that was the start of the crotch pod. But yeah, basically it's kind of the third way, you know, between cold soak and cooking.
And can you give me a couple of great recipes that work well for that crotch pot? Because she was saying like pasta salad would be a good thing to cold soak or something like that. Maybe not so much something that's supposed to be hot. What would be great at lukewarm?
See, pasta could be good. The trick is you want something like mashed potatoes are bad because they soak up the water right away, and then it's harder for your body to heat the water. So you want something that takes time to rehydrate. So as you heat the water, it's also rehydrating your meal. So I think pasta would work. And that's actually, so we met on a Boy Scout trip in San Jacinto Mountains. This is way, way long ago. I remember meeting a thru hiker. He was wearing like short shorts and like a tiny little day pack. And, you know, we're there with the scouts. We're all loaded down and we're talking to him, Reed and I, and he's got like a Ziploc bag of ramen in the back of his neck, like kind of in his hoodie there. And we're like, what's going on with that? And he says, I was hiking with two other guys, but I could only do 20 miles a day. So they left me and they have the stove. And, you know, we're trying to wrap our heads around 20 miles a day, and then thinking about like, yeah, and ramen, like in the back of your neck, that's all he had to like cook the ramen. But, you know, that, I think that stuck with me. And that's kind of like, you just move a little lower, get a little hotter, and away you go.
If only he had the intuition you have.
I think so.
He could have been the inventor of the crotch pot and not he even know. Been.
He probably was.
I think my favorite thing about the crotch pot is, and I'm going to put this up on the screen again for people who are on here, is the illustrations on how to use it. put the water in the dry food into the crotch pot, drop it down into the front of your pants, hike off like a happy camper.
Look at it cooking.
And then at the end of the day, yum, all done. That's fantastic. That is fantastic. I remember when it first came out, I didn't think it was real. You know how like on April 1st, companies will make those April 1st things.
We did launch it on April 1st. We're very proud of the joke within a joke. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just assumed, okay, this is a joke. And then after it was over, it was still selling. I was like, wait, this is a real thing?
So, it's a real thing.
That's fantastic.
Unbelievable. That's fantastic. Well, let me say,
Jeremiah, I don't think I probably didn't answer your question. I had big dreams early on for the crotch pot, like a subscription service, like a recipe club, but you know, it just never quite took off like that. So maybe I need to get with Backcountry Foodie and come up with like a crotch pot friendly line or something. Yes. Like food line.
There you go. There's at least some recipes, you know, that would be good.
Yeah.
Like the crotch pot recipe book.
Can you imagine the crotch pot recipe book?
Just call it the crotch recipes. That won't be weird at all. That won't be strange at all for people.
Not for hikers. No.
It's true. Not for hikers.
John, I was going through the comments here, and I think our first comment, unless I'm wrong here.
Oh, I saw it too. Let me get to it because I know what you're getting ready to say. So
maybe it's my goldfish drown.
It is my goldfish drown.
He is a frequent flyer here on the show. My goldfish drown tunes in a lot.
So that everybody knows, this is important. We're giving away 3 copies of this book tonight. And we said before we even got online, and this wasn't our idea. This was actually Glenn's idea. We're going to give away a book to the first person who brings up poop. And guess who it was? My goldfish drown. So
you can always count on my goldfish drown to bring up poop.
Him or Pizza Ninja. One of the two are going to bring it up, and we're going to have it. So definitely shoot us your email, and we'll shoot your information. Give us all your information. Social security number, credit card numbers, all that stuff. And we'll get that stuff over to Glenn. Okay, don't give us all that stuff, but definitely give us an address and place to ship the book, and we'll get that to you. We're also going to be giving away 2 more books as we go along. And I kind of like not telling people what we want them to do in order to get the books.
Your own insider info. And my goldfish drown, now this hasn't failed us yet, but send us an email at backpackingpodcast@gmail.com. 1, 2, 3, 4, I declare a thumb war in the subject line. Otherwise, I'll have to delete your email. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4,
I declare a thumb war. That's it right there.
So, let me tell you my 2 favorite pieces of gear. Look at him shaking his head. Like I've been on the show 30 minutes. This guy's ridiculous.
I can tell you guys have small kids.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have my first kid is on the way, arriving July 20th. Yeah.
You're ready.
But, yeah, I'm excited. So very, very popular piece of gear, Gossamer Gear sells, is the LT5s. They are trekking poles, and they're like the lightest ones around that I've found. But the piece of gear that I don't think you'd ever expect is the coolest design on a hat that I have seen. Now, I'm a little bit biased, because I am a backpacker, so I'm into this. But I don't know if you know this, Gossamer Gear sells, or did sell at the time of me ordering, just a straight black flat bill hat, but on the front in all white, it has kind of like a cartoon gear loadout, just strolled out on the floor, an organized loadout. And then at the bottom, I think in red, it says take less, do more. And that right there, I've worn that hat so much. It has burn holes in the top, burn holes from all the fires while we're out in the woods. And then the snap, I've taken it on and off so many times and adjusted. My hair gets longer. It gets matted down. Taking it off my backpack, the snap is basically falling apart. Would you ever guess that the hat is going to come out to be somebody's favorite piece?
I would not, but if you mail me your hat, I will fix the snap.
Oh, well.
Check that out.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I might just take you up on it.
I can see how important it is to you. Happy to do that.
And he wore that hat all the time.
I mean, okay, well, wash it first before you mail it.
I guarantee it smells awful. Guarantee it smells awful.
I did just wear it on my last backpacking trip and the one before that. And it's my daily go-to. Yeah. Sometimes I got to hide this hair.
Yeah, it's not a problem I have anymore.
What are you hiding under that hat?
Nothing. That's why I got the hat on. I got nothing to keep me warm.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I have an 8 head. If my hat keeps going back and it looks like I'm bald, but there's hair back there, it just starts back here. So,
there you go.
You know, I roll with what I got. Let's put it that way. And we have our next winner.
Oh, my goodness.
They didn't even know that they had it. Our next winner, unlikely hiker. My favorite GG item is the Kumo. Fantastic pack.
Wow, Melissa.
So we got our person with their Gossamer gear item. So you know what to do. 1, 2, 3, 4, I declare a thumb war. Send it to us at backpackingpodcast@gmail.com. We will get you set up for a free book. We got one left.
We got one left.
That's it. Just one left. We'll now, I was going to say, my favorite piece of gear is actually this umbrella. And that's not a joke. Like, especially in the summer here in Kentucky, it gets so humid and hot. And I hate it when it rains, because then I have to wear that stupid raincoat and sweat. And I wore that last year in July on a hiking trip. I did like 23 miles or something in a couple days. And I had that on. And I was able to carry my expensive camera on my chest without worrying about it getting soaked. I didn't sweat while I was hiking through the rain. It was the most beautiful, wonderful, amazing thing in the entire world. And it weighs less than any raincoat I own. So I just think it's a great piece of gear. Plus, it keeps you out of the sun when it gets super hot. So I never thought I'd say an umbrella would be something I would like. But that umbrella has been awesome.
That's surprising, but not surprising. I was hiking in Italy last year, year before, and never been a big umbrella fan, not because I've tried them, but just because I have such a light rain jacket that I kind of, it's my shell, my windshell, basically.
Yeah.
And so to me, an umbrella was going to add weight because I'd still need the rain shell. So maybe my rain shell, maybe my windshell saves me an ounce over the rain shell, but the umbrella is more than an ounce. But I was a believer, like you, once I used it, if you're like all day in the rain, just not having it drip around your head. Now, I had a little tiny umbrella, which was definitely suboptimal, but I made a note to myself like, hey, next time when I think it's going to rain, it's like, I'm going to try one of those big umbrellas because that thing was the bomb.
Yeah, I took it. I went on the Foothills Trail a couple years ago, and the first day it just poured the rain, and I decided, you know what? I'm not going to do the raincoat. I'm going to wear this and see how it does. And man, it was awesome. I mean, I always hate hiking in a raincoat. I hate it because you always end up sweating as much under the raincoat as what you would have gotten wet from the rain, and the sweat smells worse. So it's like, I just decided I'm going to try this thing out, and man, it was awesome. It was just awesome. And I know there's some places where you can't do it because the trail gets too in on you and there's trees and it would just tear the umbrella up. But
or if you got high wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you got high wind, that's another situation. It's not great. But
yeah,
for the right conditions.
Man, I love it.
Since we're talking umbrellas here, I'll tell you, I took that umbrella across the whole Camino. And let me just forewarn you, if you are going to be an umbrella user, you have to be confident. Because whenever I was doing the Camino, I did get made fun of by some different people. I don't know if they do it in different parts of the world or what. I did meet this girl who is also a traveler, and we end up becoming friends. She's like, yeah, the first time I met you, or not met you, but saw you, you had that umbrella. See, I would attach it here on my shoulder strap. because I wanted hands-free shade. Everybody else is walking around. You know, it's 90 degrees. They're sweating. The sun's just beaming down on them. No shade anywhere. And here I am, yada, 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 walking down the trail with my umbrella attached, totally hands-free, using both trekking poles. And she said, yeah, the first time I saw you, you had that umbrella on. It wasn't raining or anything. You were just wearing an umbrella around. And she said, I took a video of you. I said, no way. You got to send me that video. So I have the video of her following me around from behind. And you just see me walking down the trail, you know, dancing along with my trekking poles and my suspended umbrella. That thing is legit. I'm curious. I don't think you'll mind me asking, because I see this picture in your book. You know Ron Moak, right? Is that how you say his last name?
That's how. Well, yeah, different accent, but yeah.
Okay. Different accent? What? Lee getting in a punch. I love it. Well, Six Moons Designs, they have this umbrella as well. I'm wondering, who did it first, Gossamer Gear or Six Moons Designs on the umbrella?
You know, I'm just going to say Six Moon Design did it, because that's what Ron's going to say anyway. So,
it looks like y'all went to the Cascades 2011.
That sounds right.
Oh, yeah. No, it says Founders. Yeah, yeah. Brain Trust Hike by Ultralight Backpacker Gear Company Founders in the Cascades. Yeah, you got several great pictures in your book. It seems that you strategically placed them in a perfect spot. So I'd learned all the characters. I'd learned many lessons, not to blow smoke. But I do want to tell you, I was telling John this before you hopped on. I was reading this book, Take Less, Do More, Surprising Life Lessons. And I was like, I'm 31, okay? So I've graduated college. I've worked 10 years in my career. But I just keep somehow ending up in Hard Knock University. You know, you keep learning these lessons throughout life. And what it seems to me that you've done in this book is compile life lessons that I'm learning right now, but I don't know how to articulate them. So you did a fantastic job articulating them here. And I'm wondering, how did the process even come along of writing this book? Because you've done a lot in your life, and obviously you have something to say because you're putting in this book for, you know, to spread to others. What does that process even look like? How do you organize your ideas, and how does it go from just an idea to now it's in my hand?
Well, it's a process, and Jeremiah, I don't know if this is helpful. We had a pastor that always used to talk about paying the dumb tax, and mm-hmm. He said, you know, when you make bad decisions and bad things happen, or hard knocks, like you say, he says, that's like paying a dumb tax. You know, you pay the tax to learn the lesson, basically. But he said, the good news is you don't have to pay the tax. You can let someone else pay the tax. If you're paying attention and you watch them pay the dumb tax, then you can make a different decision. So I don't know if that's helpful, but some lessons we just have to learn ourselves. That's the way we remember them.
Yep.
But as far as the book, you know, it's been, I guess, depending on how far back you want to go. I mean, I've been working on it for 2 years, but probably about 10 years ago now, my friend John Mackey, co-founder of Whole Foods Market, we're hiking along, and he says, Glenn, you ought to write a book. And I said, you know, there's plenty of great books about ultralight backpacking. I don't think I need to add my 2 cents to it. But one of John's many characteristics is persistence. And so year after year, after I'd be hiking with him, and he'd keep bringing up, like, yeah, how's that book going? You know, I don't think I need to do a book. And then pretty soon he got his friends going on it. So finally, and he said, I'll write the foreword. And I thought, well, probably not too many people have John Mackey offering to write the foreword of their book. I probably ought to do something about taking advantage of that before he forgets, or, you know, decides to retract the offer. So I finally found someone to, like, a collaborator to help organize the ideas, and kind of, so we would just have like long interviews. I'd write some stuff, just ship everything to her. And then she'd start to kind of organize it into some kind of method. And it went through a couple different changes. And then in editing, it got changed all again. But it's a process. My mom had a saying. She said, you know, when you don't know how to do something, just find the smartest, the best people you can, and then do what they tell you. So that was my process.
Well, that's great advice.
I love it. Now, there are two things I want to bring up from the book. One of them is right at the very beginning, where you talked about how you like to take groups of people that don't know each other, and the only thing they have in common is that they know you, on backpacking trips. I'm actually going on a trip in a couple weeks where there are 17 people that are going to be on this trip. I think I know two of them. What got you to doing trips like this?
Well, it was actually my friend John Mackey. He likes to backpack, and he has a wide variety of friends. He's got friends who are multi-millionaires and have multiple jets, and he's got friends that were the first in their family to graduate from high school. And, you know, friends who graduated high school and that's it, to friends that have multiple PhDs. So he just likes people that are interesting people and good company on the trail. That's like his criteria. And so, you know, he invites a bunch of people on these trips, and whoever can make it goes. And so, I mean, I've met amazing people on John Mackey trips. And so that was kind of the genesis for me creating the list, what I call. So it was about 60, 70 people, and I'll get some permits and, you know, send out a blind copy to the list, and whoever responds first, they're on the trip. And so it's typically, they don't know each other. It's, you know, I'm the common connection, but they go on to make friends and sometimes do trips on their own. So
John Mackey,
that's pretty incredible.
I saw him on Joe Rogan's podcast, had no idea who he was or anything about him. And then, there's no Whole Foods where I live, by the way. It's rural Kentucky. So the nearest one's like an hour and a half away. So never heard of the guy. And then I saw him on Joe Rogan's podcast. And, you know, they've done this long form interview. And whenever you're going to talk for 2 or 3 hours, you know, your interests are going to come up. And he started talking to him about backpacking. And I was like, hold on a second. And then I looked a little more into him. And I was just listening to this episode, and he's talking about backpacking. And I was just so thirsty for it. And I was like, man, how amazing would it be if he could get Joe Rogan into backpacking? Because he already does these elk trips in Colorado where he's rucking 80 pounds at a time if he kills an elk or something. He's just one step away from backpacking like you, Glenn, an ultralighter. Yeah. And I was thinking, man, if we could get him into the fold, that's a lot of push and could spread a lot of greatness when it comes to the backpacking.
That would be
well, and there's
cool.
So much that happens in the wilderness. I don't know if you guys have read The Comfort Crisis.
No,
I have not. Who's that by?
Michael Easter.
Okay.
No, I haven't read that.
Amazing, amazing book. I mean, I would say buy my book too, because that'll help the Pacific Crest Trail Association. You know, I'm not taking any money from the book, but if you can only buy one, I might buy The Comfort Crisis. You know, he talks about so many things, but the power of wilderness and how we've done such a good job in our modern society of creating comfort for ourselves that it's killing us, really. And, you know, we need to rearrange our lives so it includes time outside and, you know, even like as simple as 20 minutes in nature 3 times a week, but then also some longer trips, kind of the 3-day rule. You know, it takes 3 days to kind of forget about all the, you know, your wife and your kids and your job and everything else, all the to-do lists. By day three, I'm sure you guys have experienced this, your mind's empty of all that stuff, and you have time to just think about things that you don't normally get time to think about and just ponder them. Or when you're hiking with other people, you get a chance to talk with them probably about things that you haven't talked to anybody about, because you've got all the time in the world and nothing to do but walk and think and talk.
Yeah, I always say the campfire is one of the best places to hang out because everybody sits and talks. It doesn't matter who you are. Something about a campfire just changes everything. It's a cool place to be around.
I read a fascinating thing, and it might have been in The Comfort Crisis. Might have been another book. They were talking about the development of man, and they talked about, you know, before fire, okay, you know, you went out and hunted or gathered during the day, and then it was dark. It was like, okay, well, now you're prey, so you get in the cave, you know, and put a rock in the entrance or whatever. But that fire kind of extended the day. So it wasn't, you know, you couldn't go out and hunt and gather because you didn't have that much light, but you had light to sit around. You could, you know, sew things, mend your bows and arrows or whatever, but it was time to talk. And that's when, you know, you can transfer knowledge. You can start to talk about things and create stories and legends and culture. You know, it's really that campfire that created that opportunity.
That's interesting. I never heard that before.
I have a very, very important question to ask you about.
Well, you cut me off before I got my other question in.
Oh, go ahead, John.
Don't cut me off, Jeremiah. Don't cut me off.
Oh, you too. That's
don't
hog
quote. This interview, Jeremiah.
Sorry. I'm so curious.
This is the most important question of the whole time, of the whole thing.
I don't know about
the most important question I can ask. You mentioned that you were trying to teach Boy Scouts how to pack ultra light, and that you and one of the other scoutmasters decided to do a Hans and Franz sketch. Can you still do your Austrian accent to this day?
Probably not.
That's a good question. I'll give you that.
I just wanted to know because I've always been curious. What does Glenn Van Pesky sound like when he talks like Hans and Franz? I just didn't know. You know?
Yeah, that might be one of those had to be there kind of things.
Had to be there. And it was, you know, before cell phones, so there's no video proof of it.
I'm not going to lie. The whole time I'm reading that, I'm imagining it in my head, and I'm dying laughing because I remember, you know, Hans and Franz.
I probably should contact Ken Hollister and like arrange for someone to video like a Hans and Franz, just so there'd be like a people go to YouTube and actually see a Hans and Franz.
Yeah, with all Gossamer gear, you know.
Yeah,
it'd be the next big commercial for Gossamer gear.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, I'll put that on the list.
Well, my question is twofold. Very, very important as well. What was it like backpacking with Matthew McConaughey and deciding who holds his poop?
So, Matthew McConaughey.
Hold on.
Matthew McConaughey is the friend of a friend. He's not my personal friend. I have criteria for people that get on my list, and it's three criteria. The first is they got to be like interesting people that are good company on the trail. You know, they're good company in the backcountry, in the wilderness. Second is they need to be like reasonably fit for the trips I do, and they have to have their gear lined up. So my shorthand for this is people who have something to say but nothing to prove. So it's people that, you know, they've got great stories, they're willing to engage, they're interested in what other people are about and the stories they have, but they don't have to be the center of attention. And Matthew McConaughey was exactly like that. I mean, he obviously, the guy's a consummate storyteller. You know, we heard when I got his book and listened to it, I'd heard some of those stories before, you know, in the canyon, definitely. But he doesn't have to be the center of attention. You know, he's interested in other people and their stories and learning from them. So, yeah, he was good company.
Oh, that's awesome. That sounds great. Now, we do have some comments. Bag. We have some comments, and one has been put up here twice, so I've got to make sure it shows up because Huck Outdoors put on here, for many years, Gossamer Gear has supported the Los Padres Forest Association by donating gear to be used gear to the used gear sales. Many social hikers thank Glenn for the donations. So wanted to make sure that one got in there for you.
That's a great story. Rick Christensen, who died recently, and Paul Cronshaw, B-Man is his trail name. They were, this was early days, so not a lot of GVP gear or Gossamer gear out there. And they both live kind of in the Santa Barbara area. And Rick was hiking in, and I think Paul was hiking out, and they both kind of noticed like that they were carrying G4 packs or whatever it was, when that was like a rare thing. You know, like driving a Cybertruck today or something. It's like, you don't see too many. So they both kind of said, hey, you know, and became fast friends. And both of them were volunteers in the Los Padres, and Rick was super handy with sewing machine. So all our, you know, bashed up gear, we'd send it to him and he'd fix it up and they'd sell it to raise funds for the volunteer association there.
That's incredible.
Fantastic. And what about the poop?
So I don't carry anyone's poop.
Why are you famous? You are. You're carrying your own poop.
Carry people's poop.
That's right. You hike alone, you carry your poop alone. Yeah.
Hey, the trail evens out the playing field. That's all that matters.
That's
the trail
right.
Trail evens out the playing field.
That's true.
So, well, where is the best place for people to go if they want to check out your book and get a copy?
Well, as of tomorrow, April 16th, it will be on sale anywhere. I know Backpacking Light is selling it. Gossamer Gear is going to have it up on the site soon. And I think the first 100 Gossamer Gear copies will be signed copies. Lightsmith.com has some copies. And then, of course, the regular Amazon. And you can, you know, if you want to support your local bike local bookstore, they can order it for you too.
And you guys can go on over to glennvanpesky.com and check out all kinds of stuff about Glenn. I went there the moment we got the email to have you on the show and just did some research. And I'm going to be honest with you, man, you are a very fascinating person. Just I wish we had more time to talk about things outside of backpacking because entrepreneurially, is that a word? You've done a lot of really cool things, and I encourage anybody who's listening or watching to go check that website out because there's some great stuff on the website about you, the person, and just kind of the things that you've done throughout your life, and it's a lot of fun to go research that and see it.
See, and I don't think I'm that fascinating. I mean, it's just my life, but what I do find is that, like most anyone, if you walk with them for a couple of weeks, they're fascinating. I mean,
absolutely.
Everyone is fascinating. We just don't normally have the time to delve into it. You know, it's kind of like, hey, I'll meet you for coffee. And it's like, okay, I got to go to my next appointment. We don't have a chance to find out what people are really about.
Yeah.
But the website was nice to be able to kind of accumulate all the stuff that people asked me for over the years, like, you know, gear lists and what I think about food and first aid and all that kind of stuff. So it's nice having it all in one place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll leave you with this. Ben McMillan commented on here. If you took a liking to it, Jeremiah can read the audio book. So you just let me know, send the check in the mail. I'll take care of that audio book for you. If you like the accent, Glenn.
The problem is Jeremiah, he wants people to understand the words of the book. So we may not want to go that route. And, now, if you want to make an Appalachian copy of it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, like a different translation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking we may have to translate it into Japanese and French. And, you know, when we get to Appalachian, I mean, that's definitely. It's
right
hard
there.
Work, though, Jeremiah. I will tell you, I did not read it myself. I did a 15-minute test and remembered my mom's words, like, no, hire some people that know what they're doing and let them do it. Just pay them to do it.
Yeah.
Here's a little trivia fact for you. When you record an audiobook, it's actually less expensive to hire a professional narrator than it is to narrate it yourself.
Really?
Yeah, because the cleanup, the editing and cleanup is a lot more if you're doing it yourself.
Interesting.
Wow.
Interesting.
Well,
pearls
I am
of wisdom outside of the backpacking world.
And if you think this accent sounds good in English, you should hear me speak in Spanish. I mean, it is a totally different world.
Well, when you were, Jeremiah, I have to admit, when you were talking about people making fun of you on the Camino for your umbrella, what flashed through my mind was, are you sure they weren't just laughing at your accent?
Yeah, they probably thought I was speaking some other language.
Well, we can't thank you enough for being on here, man. We appreciate you. If you're cool with hanging out in the green room for just a second, we're gonna get signed off here, but we would love to chat with you just for a minute before we get out.
You bet. And we got that last book to give away somehow, right?
Yeah. And I've got it planned. I'm gonna let you watch how we do it, because this is gonna be a fun one. This is gonna be a fun one because I can't remember what we talked about before, so I've changed it all. So we'll see you in just a second, Glenn. Thanks again. All right. So here's the deal, Jeremiah. I have done a compilation of Jeremiah comments from tonight's podcast.
Oh, my goodness.
And I simply want you to pick out your favorite Jeremiah comment.
Okay, you're not going to tell me who said it. You're just going to say what the comment is.
Yes, and then I will bring up the person who said it. Okay, so the first one is, Jeremiah could come out with his own recipes for the crotch pot and sell it as merch.
That's a good one.
What email do I use to get Jeremiah merch? Obviously, there are merch comments. There was a legit question. How can Gossamer Gear help Jeremiah make his own merch?
Oh, boy, they're on the merch tonight.
And then I don't know where this one came from. It says, Jeremiah starting a new cult? Are you starting a cult? That's a new one. And then you actually said the last one. Can you have Jeremiah read for the audiobook? So which comment, Jeremiah, would you like to pick as your winner?
Well, people are going to say it was rigged, but I'm going to say the last one.
So that would be our good friend Ben McMillan over at Hilltop Packs. Ben, I think we have your info, but send it to us anyways.
And we'll get the book. And Melissa, too, Unlikely Hiker. I've hiked with her quite a bit. Yeah, just shoot me a text.
Yeah. Tonight's been fun, man. This was great. Love having guys like Glenn on here who just have a wealth of wisdom from the trail that we can glean. And also, unfortunately, we never got that Hans and Franz from him. I was really disappointed in that. I was really hoping. But maybe that'll be for the next time. Maybe we can get it back on here again. And we can do that.
It was a joy, man. That was a great, fun interview. Great conversation.
It was absolutely awesome. Well, guys, thank you for tuning in to the Backpacking Podcast brought to you by Outdoor Vitals. We will catch you on the next one.
Yeah. Adios, folks.